Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Let's Bark About It Tampa Bay. Lori Elmer here. My co-host Nikki Knowlton and I are thrilled to share some exciting news about Urban Dog Studio. We're still in the same studios at 5663 building, but now, as owners, we've expanded into an amazing larger space. We're busy working long hours, adding all the special touches to our beautiful boutique studio. It's a lot of work, but we can't wait for you all to see it. While we're putting the finishing touches on our new studio, we thought it'd be the perfect time to bring back some of our very best early episodes. We know many of our new listeners haven't had a chance to hear these gems yet. The content is terrific and definitely worth resharing. So sit back, relax, and enjoy these classic episodes of Let's Bark About It Tampa Bay. And don't forget, we'll be back soon with fresh new episodes and a fabulous new studio space to share with you all. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for some great content coming your way. Welcome to episode number 32 of Let's Bark About It Tampa Bay. Lori Elmer here with my co-host Nikki Knowlton. We're the owners and photographers of Urban Dog Studio, Tampa Bay's premier pet photography studio, providing boutique portrait services in the studio and on location in the beautiful Tampa Bay area and beyond. Today's guest is a true green thumb and a horticultural guru. Teresa Badurek is the horticultural agent and master gardener program leader with University of Florida Extension in Pinellas County. She's here to educate us on the hidden dangers of toxic plants that might be lurking right in our homes and yards. And since we all want to create a safe space for our pets and our family, let's bark about it.
Are you a dog owner who only wants the best for your furry family member? Looking for expert information on topics ranging from how to keep your dog safe and healthy to where to go for the best pup cups in Tampa Bay? If so, you're in the right place. Welcome to your resource for news and information to help your dogs live their best life. And now, your hosts, pet photographers, owners of Urban Dog Studio, pet industry insiders, and doting dog moms, Lori Elmer and Nikki Knowlton. Are you ready? Sit, stay. Let's bark about it, Tampa Bay.
So whether you have a green thumb or you're the place where all plants go to die, this episode is for you. Today's guest, Teresa Badurek, I hope I'm saying that correctly, will be shedding light on the hidden dangers lurking in our landscapes and indoor green spaces and offering tips to ensure our pets thrive in a pet-safe environment.
Teresa, thank you so much for coming on the show. As a, I guess, budding plant enthusiast, I used to be able to grow anything, but I think it's because I lived in Oregon and then I moved to Florida and everything. I was the house that came to die. So within the last couple months, I discovered houseplants. And I have houseplants everywhere, and I'm propagating everything. So I'm a mom to the three dogs that I have and the two cats, and I'm all ears because I did find out that one of my plants is toxic. Mm-hmm. So please tell us a little bit about yourself and your position with the University of Florida
Extension. Yeah, hi. Thank you for having me. My name is Teresa Badurek, and I'm the University of Florida Extension Agent in Pinellas County for Urban Horticulture, which basically just means that I teach folks about plants and gardening, and I also train and coordinate the Master Gardener Volunteers in Pinellas County. So
cool. And so what's your background? How did you end up there?
So I was a big plant dork in my undergrad days. So I got a degree in biology with a botany focus. And then I decided to become a landscape architect. That was an interesting side jaunt. So I went in from plants to designing and, you know, setting up landscapes and for people with them. And after doing that for a few years, this job came up with the University of Florida and, you know, just teaching people about the plants that they live amongst every day really appealed to me. And I've been doing it for 13 years and I love it.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's great.
So for people who are wondering why, as a podcast about dogs, we have a plant specialist on. Can you tell us why it's important for pet owners to be aware of the plants, the specific plants that they have in their homes and gardens?
Well, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as pet owners, we all love our fur babies and we don't want anything bad to happen to them. And so we also take on a big responsibility. You know, we bring them to our homes, we let them out in our yards, maybe in a park. And there's numerous dangers. I'm sure you guys have probably talked about things before, like we're keeping your pet safe from traffic and from wild animals and other animals attacking. Mm-hmm. And the possibility of plants being a danger in their environment is just one more facet. And I find a lot of people have plant blindness and just don't know the plants around them they just see it all as, you know, big green leafy things and they think they're all safe.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a lot, there's actually a surprising number of plants in our environment. I would say especially Florida, but I know from other places I've lived that it's other places too, that have some kind of toxic properties to them where you would not want your pets ingesting them.
And what would you say is the most common plant in our area that you see people have either in their homes or their yards that are problematic?
So there's like a top two that we talk about when it comes to pets. And the first one in the landscape is your sagos. Some people call them sago palms. They're not a true palm. They're actually a cycad, which is a different kind of plant, very prehistoric kind of plant. So sagos and a relative of theirs called the cardboard palm or the cardboard plant, and our native cycad kuntis. So those are three, and they're all relatives. So they all contain the same compound that's dangerous for pets, and all parts of those plants are toxic. So if you ate any part of it, you would have some sort of toxic reaction, but they produce cones. They don't have flowers. That's how ancient they are in the evolutionary tree. So they produce cones, and the female cones, which produce the seed, are the most toxic part. Well, what happens with those is as they ripen, they have a reddish orange, like fleshy coating on the outside. Mm-hmm. And as the cone matures, it splits open to a pile of these reddish orange seeds at the base of the sago or the kunti or the cardboard palm. And sometimes our critters eat them. And they're absolutely toxic. It will only take one or two of those and you could kill a dog.
Wow. And I see those everywhere.
They're everywhere. I mean,
they are everywhere.
And they're not, you know, they're not a bad plant. Mm-hmm. It's just where you put it. Mm-hmm. And knowing about it, you know, so I have a dog myself. I'm, of course, aware of the toxicity of this plant. They're very common landscape plants. Some of them are very expensive. I made sure none of them were in the backyard where my dog is allowed to roam freely. So, mm-hmm. You know, he could.
They're pretty.
They're very pretty.
I'm like, I don't even know.
Yeah,
what that
and
is.
I will say the only caveat I have is I say they're good plants, but the cardboard plant, the one that I mentioned, is actually becoming an invasive exotic, and so I would actually call that one that I would just flat out never say you should plant for lots of reasons. But the backyard, you know, my dog has several environments. He's got the inside, he's got the backyard where he's allowed to be off leash and run around because it's fenced, and mm-hmm. in the front yard, which he would only be out there on a leash, meaning he's well mm-hmm. supervised because I'm on the other end of it. So right. I have a few of the kuntis because those are Florida native cycads and they're a host plant for an endangered butterfly. So I have some in my front yard where I know that he's never going to be unsupervised. And so that's the sort of thing where awareness of the plants and where they're growing and the access to the animals is super important.
Well, and is there a time of year when you need to be more careful? Is there a time of year where they tend to be dropping those cones?
Yes. So they're actually maturing now. So if you were to look in their landscape, and they're, what's really fun about the cycads is there are female plants and male plants. And the male cones are taller and skinnier and basically like a brown color. And the female cones are fatter and wider, and they vary in color, but those are the ones that spill open the orange fruits. Right now, they're maturing into fall, maybe early winter, depending on the plant. So this would be a key time to be on the lookout for it. Mm-hmm. But when the seeds are ripe, they are a bright orangey red. You could mm-hmm. definitely see them. And I would just, you know, if they're in an area where your pet is allowed to roam and play on their own, then that might be one you want to relocate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. And I'm just thinking for...
Oh, I have none of those. Yay.
And for people who have dogs that will grab anything that looks like a ball, you know, even when you're leashed and walking down the street, it's, yeah, be especially on the lookout for times when those are probably going to be falling.
Yeah. So. And of course, because, you know, your neighbors might have them. Mine are in the front yard, right? So if my neighbors are out walking their dog and they aren't aware, then they need to keep them close. They're in parks. They're, you know, you go to city and county parks everywhere. Mm-hmm. And, so, you know, if you take your dog for a walk in the park, you do need to know and to watch what they're snuffling around into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm just around the corner from Millennium Park and there's a ton of those there. They're planted. It's a native. So most of the county parks are going to plant them, and as they should.
Yes.
Because it's a native species. Yeah.
And it's just as an awareness issue. And then, so that's like the top one. When I talk to veterinarians and I talk to pet owners, these are like, that's the most common thing that they see animals in with plants that they've eaten that are toxic. The number two thing would be anything that's a lily. Anything in the lily family is particularly toxic to cats.
Yeah.
All the way to the point of if you brought in an arrangement of lilies cut in a vase, that the water in that vase that the lilies were in can poison your cat.
Oh, I didn't know the water.
The pollen. The pollen from the flowers.
I need the pollen.
So, you know, I have two cats. Lilies do not come in my house. If I get a cut flower arrangement with lilies in them, they either stay outside because I keep my cats indoors. They stay outside. Or I remove the lilies and I keep them far away from where they are. But even that makes me nervous because I don't know for sure that the pollen hasn't transferred.
Yeah. Right. Wow. I didn't realize that pollen and the water were an issue. I knew the bloom itself was. But yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah. I knew the pollen. And I'm that annoying friend that anytime somebody says, oh, look, I got flowers, I write them like, yeah. You need to throw this away. I'm so sorry.
But you know, you might be saving their cat's life.
Right.
Yeah. I know I saved at least one. I think everybody else is like, yes, Nikki, I know you've told me before. I'm like, well, I'm telling you again.
And we can grow lilies. It's not just cut flowers. We can grow lilies in the landscape.
Yeah.
And it's anything in the lily family. And even some of the relative, you know, like amaryllis and day lilies and things like that can be toxic that you can grow. Now, I mean, I know when I talk to veterinarians and when we talk to wildlife experts, cats should always be kept indoors. You know, mm-hmm. It's safer for the cats. It's safer for our birds and other wildlife. And so I'm less worried about the lilies in my landscape because my cats are inside. However, if you do happen to have outdoor kitties that are chewers, this would be something else to be mindful of in the landscape.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I had stargazers forever. They're my favorite. They smell so
beautiful.
Good. And had no idea. I really lucked out on that because you name the toxic thing. I've done it with my animals and have lucked out. So
yeah.
So what do you recommend if somebody just wanted to go out, like they've never really even thought about toxic plants in their landscape before. And if they were just going to go outside and start surveying their own backyard, what process would you recommend they go through to determine if something that's currently in their yard is toxic? Or a problem. I mean, because not everything is necessarily toxicity. There are other safety concerns or hazards as well. So
yeah. So when we're thinking about this, I always like to remind folks that spines and thorns and things like that can actually be quite dangerous for your pet, especially if they're chewers. You certainly can imagine what would happen if your dog started chewing on a rose bush. And then also palms. The fruit of palm trees is particularly tasteful. Dogs seem to really like it. Even our wild coyotes like to eat palm fruits and they fall on the ground. Yeah. And what I've heard from veterinarians is that dogs, especially smaller dogs, they just hoover up a bunch of these fruits and the seeds inside are fairly large and they actually get impacted. So they can hurt the dog too. So you want to look around the landscape for, you know, fruits with big seeds, for spines and for thorns. And, you know, either relocate those plants or maybe create a barrier, you know, from where your dog plays to them. Or in the case of palms, we don't recommend that you cut palm fronds until they're dead. But the flowering, we call them inflorescences, the flower cluster that comes out of a palm mm-hmm. that will eventually develop mm-hmm. into the fruit, those can be cut at any time. That's not harmful to the palm if you need to. So let's say you had a palm and your dog was eating the fruit and you were worried. When those emerge, you can cut those off. And so you won't have the fruit in that part of your yard. So that's something mm-hmm. else to think about too.
That's the white fluffy plume that comes in.
Yeah. Well, they do vary.
Or yellow. Well.
A lot of them are whitish yellow. They come out big, like tufts almost near the top of the mm-hmm. palm. They all have a slightly different mm-hmm. look, but they're very similar. You can cut those out mm-hmm. if you need to. So that's one way to reduce some of the physical hazards that are mm-hmm. just as dangerous. And then in the realm of toxic things in the landscape, I would just always caution folks that if you're going to use anything in your garden, in your landscape, a pesticide, a fungicide, an herbicide, anything, even if it's organic, we cannot assume that it's safe for everybody. So you always want to read the label and they're tiny. So you need to get your glasses out, your readers, your magnifying glass.
the magnifier.
Yes,
on
the
your
magnifier
phone.
On your phone.
I've started using
but like
that.
Read that because it will give you instructions on, you know, what are the hazards of this? If you spray this on the landscape, do you need to have a certain interval before you can let pets or children back out there? And so, you know, don't assume because it says all natural or organic or safe. Don't assume you know everything about it. Make sure you read that label. That's key.
And what are the common ingredients that it would be in, like, say, an organic fertilizer or?
There's a few different ones, but one really good example I can think of off the top of my head is people are really pushing for finding less toxic herbicides to use in the environment mm-hmm. to kill weeds, right? We all have weeds in Florida. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. And you can use vinegar as a weed killer. Now, if for it to mm-hmm. really work, though, you can't use household vinegar. You have to buy a much stronger vinegar, like 15-30% acid. And if you do that, not only do you have to wear like gloves and eye protection and make sure it doesn't get on your skin, but now you've applied this to the landscape where your dog runs. And imagine the little paws and the little pads mm-hmm. on their paws soaking up all that acid. And we think, oh, it's just vinegar. It's perfectly safe. But you can actually give right. them a burn. So that's why we look at that stuff. And mm-hmm. a lot of them are like citrus oil based too, which can be more of an irritant than a toxin. Mm-hmm. But you know, your puppy could run through it and come in drooling and crying and you're going to freak out just as bad, right? Like even if it doesn't end up being toxic, it's still right. a scary moment, possibly expensive trip to the vet, you know? So you just want to mm-hmm. make sure you're aware of all that stuff.
Okay. Right. Right. And it's not like it's something where you can just, you know, hose it off. I mean, if you hose it off, it no longer works, right? Because if you, once you dilute it, it's not really going to be as effective.
More than likely.
Yeah.
But it'll usually give you like an interval, like a time period to where it'll be safe to go back into that area, depending mm-hmm. on what it is. And so okay. that's why reading the label is super important.
Right. yeah. And I think okay. a lot of pets too, that have that tend to be allergy prone or just have mm-hmm. irritated skin all the time. You're going in and you're getting the expensive shots once a month and everything else. They're probably going to respond even more.
Possibly, yeah.
acutely and significantly. Yeah. So yeah, I'd be careful about, I don't know. I'm one of those people that doesn't like to put anything. My neighbors probably hate us. Yeah. If our lawn is green, it's because
bad. It's natural.
Because the stuff that decided our environment was good have taken off, but we haven't fertilized or put anything on our lawn in over 20 years. And it kind of shows, but
it's got a nice ground cover.
Yeah.
Mine, I personally, I don't like lawns. I don't believe in them. And I have my lawn. by choice and neglect.
Well, we have a name for that. The Freedom Lawn. If it's green, if it's green, you mow it. You don't, it doesn't need to be high manicure. Like that's not right. necessary. Yeah. So, but you asked me earlier, and I wanted to go back to this, if you don't mind. You asked me earlier about identifying the plants, because as I mentioned, I find a lot of people go outside and they just see green. They see light green and dark green and big leaf and little leaf, but they don't know what they are. And that's just simply they haven't been exposed to it. So there's a couple different ways to go about identifying plants. There are a number of apps, and I always recommend these with caution, but there are a lot of apps you can download on your phones that are plant identification apps. I don't have one recommendation over the other. I can't say, well, this one's better than that one. And even on our favorite search engine, whose name will remain nameless, the most popular search engine, they have a tool where you can search by photos of something. Mm-hmm. So
yes,
you can take a picture of, I mean, it could be anything, a coffee mug, a leaf or a flower, mm-hmm. and it will locate it from all the searches ever done on the internet and tell you what it is. And I can tell folks who just don't know anything about plants, you know, you can use these tools, but what I would always caution folks is that you'll take a picture of a plant or a flower and it'll say, oh, it's this. Do not blindly believe that it's correct. So use this as a great tool as a starting point. So if it suggests that, hey, it's a, let's use the sago, it's a sago cycad plant, just always be like critical about it and go back and like verify it, look it up, read about it. Does it really match? Does it really seem like the right plant? Mm-hmm. But those are really good tools for folks who just don't know anything, don't have any time, you know, that's a quick approach. The next approach would be to contact us at Extension because we identify people's plants all the time. Now, please don't send us 100 pictures of all 100 plants in your yard, but all at once. But we actually can take, you know, emails, and you can bring in pictures or samples to our office. And I'm here in Pinellas County, but all the counties in Florida have an extension office, and they can simply look that up online. They can search up University of Florida Extension and put their county name in. But you can, and everyone will have different hours and different locations, but you can bring us your plants and we'll look at them and help you identify them. And that is, I think, a nice resource that a lot of people don't know about. And they can also email pictures of them to us, and we'll identify them remotely.
That's awesome.
Oh, I like
that. Be careful.
That.
You might be getting...
I
have an email address now.
Yeah.
I basically went to the search engine and it was like green and yellow leaf on blah. And then it would bring up, and then I would match the pictures. And then I looked at the app, but you have to pay, and I don't
know. So I'm going to clue you in a little secret. I have a couple of apps, which again will remain nameless, but they say you have to pay, but you can like click a little X where they're trying to make you pay, and then it goes away and you can use it for free, and they just give you ads.
Oh, okay. I'll definitely be.
Yeah.
And then the search engine part where you can do the picture, I did that. And then basically I've taken any living thing besides grass at my house. Even from outside, I have the propagating bug right now, bug. Every jar, everything I have is full of water and full of
clippings, yes,
even off the bushes outside. Mm-hmm. So there, that's where I'm at this point, and where I learned that a couple of my bushes are toxic.
Yeah, well, and
my dogs are short and they can't reach them.
So I was gonna go back to that because I mentioned like the top two really toxic plants, but there's a number of other like really common ones in the landscape. Did you want me to cover a few more of those?
I would love for us to do that.
And houseplants.
I have a list of some houseplants too, but some of the really popular sort of shrubs that are very toxic in the landscape would include lantana, which is a popular butterfly garden plant, and also has a particular variety that's another invasive exotic, but there are native lantanas. And so those are very toxic. Oleander. Have you guys heard of oleander?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That one is definitely.
Well, you can make tea and I think there was a movie.
Probably.
That.
I remember my grandmother who grew up here in Florida used to tell us stories of kids getting sick from oleander. And so it's been.
Well, mine was more like a murder mystery.
So that's oleander, lantana. Oh, azaleas. Azaleas are toxic. I know.
They're
very pretty. Just don't eat them.
I'm going to make tea, Lori.
Watch out when she invites you over.
I know.
And then also milkweed. So everybody's like on the big kick to help save monarch butterflies, and they need milkweed plants. And this is another case of like, don't eat it, but it's a great plant. Same thing for your pets. Don't plant these in an area where the pets are free to roam and chew and eat things, but plant them somewhere, you know, where they're going to be supervised where the plant is. Trees, some of our trees can be toxic. I know we talked about this with a veterinarian recently, that acorns can be kind of dangerous. So the acorns themselves aren't really toxic, but they do contain tannins, which are very bitter and can be very... just very caustic and cause stomach upset. And again, some of the dogs, some of your pets out there, if you have one of these, it just eats everything. They just snarf them all up. You know, you can eat too many acorns and have them get stuck in there too. And so acorns can be like an issue for some dogs, but I wouldn't call them toxic. What else do we have? Oh, I have a list of, I set aside a list of indoor plants too, because I thought that was really interesting. And I know you probably have some of them, but the English ivy, Diffenbachia, philodendrons, Thai plant or the tea plant, depending on who you talk to, how they pronounce it, pothos, toxic. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of these are more toxic in the sense that they cause irritation. So the animal will, you know, chew on it and think, God, that's horrible. And they'll start drooling and, you know, maybe vomiting or something, but they won't necessarily all end in absolute tragedy. However, again, the pet is very uncomfortable. They might need treatment. It might be an expensive trip. And so you want to go through your house plants for sure. And either, you know your pet, either make sure they can't reach them, can't get to them. And I would never be able to stop my cats from that ever. So I don't have indoor plants. They just make a mess of them too. So if they weren't toxic, they're just everywhere. But so you just want to be kind of aware of that. And really the best resource for that, I mean, there's lists of toxic plants and safe plants, but one of the good resources for looking this stuff up is the ASPCA has a website all about toxic plants. And you can just type in, they have an alphabetical list. You can scroll through with pictures, or you can type in the name of the plant. Like, let's say you're at the nursery and you think, oh, this is a super cute plant. I need to bring this home and it needs to live in my kitchen. You can look it up on your phone on the ASPCA website and see right then and there if it's toxic or not. So you can go, well, all right, it's toxic. Maybe I won't bring this home after all. And that's another good resource. Okay. I'm trying to think of other. Yeah, that and the Florida Friendly Landscaping Program too has a Florida Toxic Plants app that you can download. And again, it's through the University of Florida, the Florida Friendly Landscaping Program. And I could send you guys a link for that, but
that'd be awesome.
You can search it up and it just says Florida Toxic Plants. It's a little app on your phone, but it doesn't have the same interaction as taking a photo. Mm-hmm. So this one, you have to know the plant, which is again, very helpful when you're at that point of purchase, when you're at the nursery or at the garden center, debating whether or not this thing comes home with you to live in your house or your yard. And you can say, oh, well, I know what it is because it's right here on the plant.
And is that does that focus primarily on Florida natives or just common
landscape? Stuff in Florida? Yeah. Okay. So not necessarily native, because we have toxic things that are native and otherwise. So it's got a little bit of everything there.
Okay.
Yeah. We'd love the link. We'll include that in the show notes.
Oh, good.
So, so if anybody, you know, definitely wants to go there and we'll try and include some of the ASPCA resource. We'll try and pull that up too. So we can include that. And then any of those lists that you were saying, if it's something that you're, a published thing too, we'd love to include links or the actual document if we can
fit
it into the show notes. We'll put that in there for sure.
Absolutely.
So that's awesome. And then, so if somebody is just starting from scratch on a new landscape too, I mean, I would imagine those resources would be incredibly helpful. And I don't know, but maybe you can answer this. If somebody's working with a landscape architect or a gardening expert, do they typically know these answers? Should they rely on them or do they still have to do their own due diligence? I mean,
That's a great question. I mean, I was a landscape architect and I took a special interest in that, but I don't know that everybody does. And people come to the world of landscape design and landscape architecture from different pathways. So in my case, I loved plants first and then kind of went into design. But I have met lots and lots of designers who really are more about the design side and their plant knowledge maybe isn't as deep. And that's not to say anything bad. It's just that they may not be aware. However, even knowing that as a pet owner and a plant lover, if I was going to hire someone to design a landscape for me, I think it would be perfectly, understandable to say to them, listen, I have dogs, I have cats, whatever. And I want to make sure the landscape is safe for them. And to task that person, even if they've never done it before, even if they've never thought about it before, to do their job, to look those plants up. If I've done that, I'm still going to be a little extra cautious. I'm going to look over those plans. I'm going to run them through these apps and double check everything. But I think that we should be asking, you know, designers and architects to do stuff like that for us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they won't do it automatically.
Okay. So I wanted to find out if that was like just an automatic thing that they would do that knowing that you're a pet.
Something.
No, I almost never hear of anybody designing particularly for this. I mean, we have a whole host of information from University of Florida. They have one site where they call it petscaping. So, but I don't encounter that in the everyday world dealing with designers. Mm-hmm. This would be like a special ask of them, but in my mind, it's perfectly natural and it's not asking too much at all. It's just like saying, I want fruit trees or I want shade. You're just saying, I want this one component. So absolutely.
Cool. Yeah. So everybody out there, if you're getting ready to redo your landscape and you're working with a professional, task them with making sure all of their selections are going to be safe for your pets, dogs, cats, whatever. So
absolutely.
Yeah. That is so cool. Oh my gosh, this is such great information. I can't wait to be able to share those links with all of our listeners and start spreading the word, because I think it's an afterthought for so many people to make sure that their landscape is safe, or to even look out for hazards outside of their own landscape. I know walking my own dog, I'm sometimes not paying close attention, and I really should be. So,
well, and what, yeah. from what we see, it's really almost an emergency that prompts people. The calls that we get, the questions that we get are after the bad thing happened. The dog ate the thing.
Right.
And I would also like to reiterate, if I didn't already say it, that we can definitely identify those plants for you. If you can bring us photographs, pictures, samples of them, email them. But the number one thing I say is make sure to take the pet to the vet first.
Yes.
Because we've had people come into our office and, you know, oh, my dog ate this thing, and is it poisonous? And they were throwing up, and we were like, okay, what did the vet say? And like, the dog's in the car. We're like, no. Leave the plant. Go. Go and go to the vet first and call us back after this dog is totally safe and healthy. And then we'll work with the vet, you know, and help them. So,
yeah.
Second. Lori, we should also, in the show notes, let's put the poison control for pets.
100%. Yes. We'll definitely put that resource in. Just as somebody who's also been involved in the vet world, I'll just share that the vet really doesn't need to know exactly what plant your pet ate. If they're having a toxic reaction, they're going to treat them symptomatically. They're going to treat them based on how the animal presents. It's always good to try and share that information, and they may even call poison control if they know exactly what the animal ate, because most vets don't know all about plants.
Right.
But they may call poison control and find out from poison control what the treatment protocols are, but they're going to give them initially, they're going to just give them supportive care. And that's going to be the most important thing to start treatment for that. Yeah. So, and then hopefully when it's all said and done, you're going to find out that it was just something that was causing excess salivation or a little bit of tummy upset, and not something that's going to have any long-lasting impact. But they're going to treat them just with supportive care initially. And that's the most important thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we'll figure it out later. We can help you figure out what the plant is. And sometimes I know the vets, once they've got the animal kind of stabilized, it's helpful for them to maybe know what the components were that were toxic. So if this happens to you, do follow up, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Pet first, to the doctor.
Right.
To the doctor and that poison control. I can say from a couple of different clinics that I've been in that they do want you to call poison control. And when you do that, a toxicologist will actually work hand in hand with the veterinarian for the care of the quickest care for your animal.
Yeah. And I don't know about the rest of you, but when an emergency is happening, sometimes you get a little panicked. So I actually saved it in my cell phone. I saved the ASPCA the toxic plant hotline. And so if it ever happens, I just dial the number.
Right. So vet, poison control, toxic plant hotline. And then on Monday, later on, you can always send a photo over to Teresa.
And you can email them. You can email them. I'll give you the email to share with everybody, but they can email those. You know, while you're sitting in the vet's office, you've got pictures of the plant and you're worried about Fluffy. You can just email those over to us and we'll get to them as quick as we can.
That's awesome. Okay. But I mean, they're not always, you guys are not an emergency.
You're not
an emergency service.
No, we're not. That's the other reason why the vet always has to come first.
Right. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Wow. This is such great information, Teresa. I am so grateful that you were willing to come on the show dog podcast and talk about plants.
I know. I'm super excited because I have a budding green thumb. I mean, I actually have roots on my stuff.
Oh, I know. Isn't it fun? So. It is really fun. It's addicting too.
It's very addicting.
And I may be reaching out to you to get some advice on how to prune all of my native Florida coffee.
Okay.
And my beauty berries, because I love them, but they're getting a little out of control. So
as they will. Yes. And yes, you guys can always reach out to me, and that email address that we'll share with everybody. I mean, that is for anyone in Pinellas County to ask us plant questions. So it doesn't have to just be about toxic plants. It can be, hey, I just want to know what this plant is, or hey, I need to know how to prune my beauty berry and what can I do? And that's what we're here for.
Okay. Awesome. Well, once again, Teresa, thank you so much for coming on the show.
And
yeah, this is great information. And hopefully we don't flood your inbox.
Well, as long as we don't have sick pets, that's okay. They can email us, right?
Awesome. Awesome.
So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. All right.
Bye.
And that's a wrap. Thanks so much for tuning in this week. Teresa, if you're listening, thank you so much for sharing your wealth of knowledge and your practical tips on creating a pet-friendly haven without compromising our love for plants. We can now take proactive steps to keep our pets safe. Teresa shared all the links to the resources she mentioned in today's episode, and they're included in the show notes at urbandogstudio.com under episode number 32. This is really an important episode for all pet owners, so be sure to share it, and don't forget to leave us a review. We love hearing from our listeners. See you all next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Let's Bark About It Tampa Bay. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to leave a review. And while you're there, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss out on our upcoming episodes. Be sure to visit our website at www.urbandogstudio.com for show notes and links to resources discussed in this episode. Thanks for being a part of this dog-loving community. Now go give your dog a cookie, a belly rub, and say hi from us.